Public hearing is conditional use number 1790, Martha's Light LLC.
This is an application to consider the conditional use of land in an AR1 agriculture residential district for a continuing care retirement community to be located on a certain parcel of land lying and being in Baltimore 100, Sussex County, on a parcel containing 42.85 acres, more or less, of a 54.87 acre tract, lying 500 feet northeast of Muddy Neck Road, also referred to as Road 361, and adjacent to the westerly side of the Aswamon Canal, and being 150 feet east of Ogra Drive within the town of Ocean View. Again, for the record, the Planning and Zoning Commission received prior to this meeting, at least 10 days ago, a large exhibit booklet, which is titled Mariposa at Bethany, a continuing care retirement community. It includes a volume of information. It also has a finding of fact, site plans on a preliminary basis, makes reference to the project team. It includes an executive summary, a reference to existing conditions with a boundary survey and overview of current site conditions, a proposed development concept, which includes development of the Mariposa at Bethany concept, preliminary land use service comments, subdivision considerations to Chapter 99-9C of the subdivision ordinance for references, compliance with zoning requirements for the AR1 agriculture residential district, compliance with Sussex County Comprehensive Plan environmentally sensitive developing area information, compliance with Chapter 99 of the subdivision regulations, and then 32 exhibits, which are a part of that exhibit booklet. That is a part of the record and has been. Part of that record includes reference to the Department of Transportation. DLDOT did not require a traffic impact study for this application. The present level of service with existing conditions with no development would be level of service B. Existing condition with development under existing zoning with existing peak hour traffic plus site generated traffic and projected level of service would increase the level of service C based on DLDOT's information. From the Office of Sussex Conservation District, in the form of a memorandum dated May 6th of 2008, we are advised that there are two soil types on this site, that the applicant would be required to follow recommended erosion and sediment control practices during construction and to maintain vegetation. The site contains areas of hydric soil, and the applicant would follow all federal and state wetland requirements. That the site is located within a flood zone X within the 500-year flood, and also a flood zone AE, which requires elevation requirements. That no off-site drainage improvements would be required. That the applicant would be required to follow state sediment and stormwater requirements for any on-site drainage improvements, and that no tax ditches are referenced or impacted. Attached to that memorandum is a copy of an aerial infrared showing the site and all the projects surrounding it. We have a copy of the soil map showing the same. We have a soil report, and again, we have an article on prime and other important farmlands, which are attached to that memorandum. From the County Engineering Department and dated May 5th, we're advised that the site is located in a county operated and maintained sanitary sewer district, being the Bethany Beach Sanitary Sewer District planning area. The wastewater capacity is available for up to 4 EDUs per acre. That ordinance number 38 construction will be required. That the current system connection charge rate is $4,088 per EDU. That the proposed project must extend mainline sewer and make its connection to a 15-inch gravity line on Ogra Drive. That the project is capable of being annexed into the county-operated sewer district following completion of certain administrative procedures. The sewer district would be the Bethany Beach Sanitary Sewer District. Conformity to the South Coastal Area Planning Study of 2005 update will be required. In additional comments, they state that the proposal is to construct a continuing care retirement community. The project will be located on 42.85 acres. The remaining 12 acres are not proposed for development at this time. Proposed project is within the Bethany Beach planning area for sewer service and connection to the sewer system is mandatory. The parcel adjoins the Bethany Beach Sanitary Sewer District and annexation into the district is possible following completion of those administrative procedures. The proposed project exceeds system design assumptions for sewer service. However, because of the project's close proximity to Pump Station 100, capacity is expected to be adequate if the project does not exceed the preliminary estimate of 330 EDUs. There is excessive capacity in the system that can accommodate the proposed project. The project is required to make its connection at the reference 15-inch gravity line. There will be adequate capacity for the remaining portion of the parcel if development is in accordance with the South Coastal Area Planning Study update of 2005. The proposed development will require a developer-installed collection system in accordance with the county standard requirements and procedures and the South Coastal Area Planning Study. The county engineer must approve the connection point. The county engineering department requires that a sewer concept plan be submitted for review and approval prior to requesting annexation to the district. The concept plan shall include provisions for an 8-inch connection point extending to the remaining portion of the parcel. A reference attaching a checklist, but is not attached. One-time sewer connection charges and annual front footage and service charges will apply. They provide a contact person for information. There will need to be a memorandum of understanding signed prior to annexation, obligating the developer to pay front footage assessment and system connection charges in accordance with county policies and procedures for non-exempt properties. And as stated, a concept plan is required. That was signed by John Ashman, Director of Utility Planning. We have copies submitted separately from the Office of Management and Budget. It includes the original plus comments, the applicant's response through McCrone Incorporated, and also the final letter dated April 3rd of 2008, which is a part of the document or the exhibit booklet. And it states that, as noted in our original response, this project is located within a level 2 and level 4 area according to the strategies for state policies and spending. This office had no objections to the project, provided it is in compliance with all applicable rules and regulations. After reviewing the response letter, it appears that the developer is willing to work to address any concerns the state agencies might have regarding this project. And that was signed by Connie Holland, Director of State Planning Coordination. We have a letter from the Honorable State Representative Gerald Hocker. States that I'm pleased to have the opportunity to offer this letter of support. The community known as Mariposa at Bethany will provide a vital addition to the resources and services available to our area. As each of you are aware, the county still remains one of the fastest growing counties, not only in the state of Delaware, but in the Mid-Atlantic region. This increase in population is due in part to the aging of citizens and the desire of many retirees to relocate to our community due to their summer experiences as visitors and the high quality of life offered in the area. Over the past several years, I have supported and lobbied for an increase in medical and long-term care facilities to serve not only our citizens, but our visitors. BB Medical Center, along with Atlantic General and Peninsula Regional, are also paying close attention to this need, and new medical services are being made available to our area. The benefits of having Mariposa of Bethany Beach in our area are numerous and are certainly ones that will enhance our entire community, not just a specific age group. Being able to provide long-term services for citizens will allow them to stay a part of our community and reduce the burden to families, since few options exist in this venue. The creation of jobs and other opportunities for our citizens will also be welcome, since they will range from service-oriented to health professionals. proposed number of 300 residents in addition to the need for 200 year-round positions will be a tremendous stimulus to our economy. It is my understanding that as a nonprofit facility, many of the facilities created at this site will be made available to the community. I heartily endorse this project. I am also confident the positive associated with this undertaking will not only meet a growing need for the residents of our area, but will impact positively the young people who want to continue to stay in this area by providing them with solid job possibilities. I encourage the members of the Planning and Zoning Commission to support this initiative and take the necessary steps to approve this project. Signed, Gerald W. Hocker. And I also received a letter from the Bethany Beach Area Chamber of Commerce in support. It was received by County Council on February 28th of 2008. That makes reference to their support location, similar comments to the references to the health needs for the area, the continuing retirement community that PUMH seeks to build on Muddy Neck Road will benefit our area in a number of ways. It will provide much needed services to an area that with few options, enabling residents and their families to remain a part of our community as they age. It will create more than 200 year-round jobs in positions that range from food service and maintenance to health professionals. Eventually add 300 residents in addition to the employees who will add year-round stimulus to our local economy and as a nonprofit make many of its facilities available to the community. And that was signed by Karen McGrath, Executive Director. And that's all I have, gentlemen.
All right, sir, we thank you. And once again, before we begin, I take it that those of you who left have an interest in this application? I sort of thought so. Okay, thank you. We'll take questions later on. You can just stand by. We'll get to you in a second. And the chair recognizes Ms. Hansen.
Thank you very much. Good evening, members of the commission. My name is Stephanie Hansen, and I'm an attorney at Young, Conaway, Stargate, and Taylor. I'm here tonight representing Peninsula United Methodist Homes, or also called PUMH. PUMH, through an entity that it is forming, that entity being Mariposa at Bethany LLC, is the applicant and the potential purchaser of the property. The property is currently owned by the trustees of the Protestant Episcopal Church of Delaware for the benefit of St. Martha's Episcopal Church. With me tonight is Dave West, who's the Vice President of New Business Development for PUMH. He'll be one of the speakers this evening. Also, we have Sarah Jarawala from PUMH, who is the Business Development Coordinator. We have Keith Rudy from McCrone, who you've seen many times, and Kevin Perdett from McCrone, who you've also seen many times. We also have Mr. Vernon Feather, who is a representative of the architect of this project. The architect is called SFCS. And Mr. Feather is here tonight as well, and he'll be speaking. As I mentioned, the applicant is actually going to be Mariposa at Bethany LLC. This is the entity that PUMH is forming. If you'll notice, the application in front of you today is called Martha's Light LLC. That's the former name. There's a lot of renaming, kind of corporate restructuring going on. So Martha's Light LLC is the old name. The new name of the applicant is Mariposa at Bethany LLC. And PUMH is actually going to be the entity that's working with Mariposa at Bethany through a development and management agreement, so they're going to be developing and managing the project. PUMH, as you know, is a nonprofit organization found in 1954 by the Reverend George Pajarin. He's a Methodist minister who recognized the need to provide a secure residential retirement for older adults in his congregation. And today, PUMH owns and operates three continual care retirement communities in Delaware and operates another one in Maryland. And so that's actually what our first exhibit is. And if we could have Keith come up and do Vanna White, perhaps. And we tried to, some of these exhibits are going to be a little bit hard to see, so if you'd like for us to move them a little bit closer, we'll do that. We've oriented one so that they can be towards the commission and the other. It looked like most folks were over on this side of the chamber, so we've oriented this one for most side of the chamber.
Once again, folks, please feel free to get up, come over and take a look. help yourselves?
Some of, they're not, most of them are not going to be kind of this detail-oriented, so you'll be able to see them a little better, but, you know, if you need to move a little bit closer, like the chairman said, please do. PUMH has four other communities, and what we've done is try to put together a collage of those four other communities, some of which you're probably likely very familiar with. One is the Methodist Manor House in Seaford. Keith, can you point out the Methodist Manor House in Seaford? What we're trying to show with this collage is the orange are actually the PUMH facilities. Around them are the residential communities of which they're a part, and these are fully integrated and nestled within the various residential communities. Second, continuing care retirement community is Methodist Country House in Wilmington. That was built in 1960. Manor House in Seaford was 1966. The Cokesbury Village in Hockessin, 1978. And Heron Point in Chestertown, which is the newbie, is 1991. What is a continuing care retirement community, or a CCRC? A CCRC is a campus. And it's a campus that includes different types of residential, health care, and wellness settings. And it's all geared around the changing health needs of older adults. There's a residential component. There's a mixed residential component. So you have independent living apartments. You've got independent living cottages. There's assisted living apartments. There's special skilled nursing areas for Alzheimer's, dementia patients, memory support. There are residential service centers for the residents, so you might have a bank, an office of a bank, a library, post office, beauty salon, gift shop, whatnot. Then there's the health care and wellness component that includes an aquatic and land-based therapies as well as exercise programs. So we're going to go into these a lot more specifically as we get into the presentation. But next I'd like to talk a little bit about the project kind of in general. Can we bring up the aerial photo of the project? And then we'll have the vicinity map on the bottom. As we mentioned earlier, the property is currently owned by the trustees of the Protestant Episcopal Church. And this project is a portion of a larger 55-acre piece of property. It's Keith, can you point out? You need the area. Where we're located, it's currently everything is farmed. Where we're located is just south of the town of Ocean View, south and east of the town of Ocean View. We can get it there. Okay. We're going to be west of the town of Bethany Beach. And then the surrounding neighborhoods of Sea Colony. Well, there's Sea Colony to the east. There's Southampton, Somerset, Bethany Meadows, Clearwater, Sea Colony. I think what we're really trying to show with this particular exhibit is that we're the hole in the donut. You know, we're certainly an infill project. This is an area that we're in within the environmentally sensitive developing district. It is zoned AR1. However, we're surrounded by development, not only just minor low-density residential development. We're surrounded by Sea Colony. We're surrounded by the town of Ocean View and Bethany Beach. And just to kind of give you an idea of where we are. We're also within the state levels 2 and 3. I thought I heard Mr. Lank mention the letter from the state planning office said it was a 2 and a 4. It's actually a 2 level, service level 2, investment level 2 and 3. It's one of these split, I don't want to call it split zone. It's not split zone. It's split state strategy zone properties. This is also located in your exhibit book at tab 3. The current draft of the future land use plan for Sussex County shows the area as part of the municipality of Ocean View, which is incorrect. There's only a portion of this property is actually within the town of Ocean View. It can be a little bit difficult to see. Maybe, Keith, you can point out the property, but for the fact that there's a long flagpole that extends from the mass of the property down to Muddy Neck Road, this would be a landlocked piece of property. The flagpole and the property to the east, which is Canal Landing, has been annexed into the town of Ocean View. Ocean Way Estates Phase 4, which is along the western border of the property, is also in the town of Ocean View. Directly to the north of the property, however, is Ocean Way Estates. That is not the town of Ocean View. But we are still the hole in the donut. And as again, can you point out where the town of Bethany Beach is as well? Right over there. Okay. Because we're so close to the town of Ocean View, and because we're actually in Ocean View's growth zone, we actually started going through the town of Ocean View to be annexed into there about a year and a half ago. And that had really been the thought all along, is that we would get annexed into the town of Ocean View. And so we began a discussion process with them, a number of meetings with them. We held a number of public meetings with them to get comfortable with the project, which they were. They went through an election season. A couple new folks came onto the board. They've re-looked at the project again. And I think, you know, there was some heightened awareness that there are only so many registered voters in the town of Ocean View. There are approximately 500 or so registered voters in the town of Ocean View. This project, in which we're proposing 232 dwelling units, and then we're not counting the health care units in there, but these are the dwelling units. Their concern, the town of Ocean View's concern, was that, geez, 232 dwelling units, that's one, maybe two people, perhaps registered voter type people moving in here, that could have a serious effect on our elections. And so they were very concerned about that, and that was a big reason why they said, well, we love your project, we think it's a great project, you know, we're going to support you, we'd like to see you go through Sussex County. Thanks, but you know, we'll be there to cheer you on. They've actually written a letter supportive of us as well, which I'd like to submit.
Thank you.
The development of this particular project in Ocean View also would have needed to, we needed to write a new ordinance, an ordinance creating a new zoning district, R4, so that you could mix and match these types of different types of residential dwelling units, different with a almost like an essentially commercial flair to them, because you're going to have a bank and a beauty shop and whatnot. And it became a little bit too much for them. So they've said, thanks, no thanks, please go to Sussex County, and we think you have a great project. So then the question became, okay, if we're going to go to Sussex County, how do we do this? Because this isn't like a regular subdivision plan. We're not talking about individual lots. You're not talking about owners coming in and buying anything in particular. What you have, and this is really isn't even a subdivision plan. The only subdividing that's going on is the fact that this is 43 acres out of a 55-acre tract. So by the fact of treating this project separately and coming in with this, it will perform a de facto subdivision of that larger 55-acre piece. But there's one owner, it's one lot. So the question was, do we go through P&Z? Do we go through the Board of Adjustment? There was a lot of discussion. And the first thought was, well, perhaps we need to go through the Board of Adjustment, because the Board of Adjustment approves as a special use in an AR convalescent homes and nursing homes. So we had a discussion with the attorney for the Board of Adjustment. He wrote a letter, and those discussions are in tab 30 of your book. And the thinking from the attorney from the Board of Adjustment was, well, this is more than just a residential development. This has a number of other components associated with it, and it's something really that ought to go to planning and zoning as a conditional use. And so that's how we came to come before you as a conditional use at this point. On this AR1 zone property. Next, I'd like to go into a little bit more detail of specifically the plan. So if we could bring up the site plan, and we're going to shortly take a walk through that site plan. As I mentioned, we're seeking a conditional use from Sussex County to construct the CCRC. This CCRC is going to consist of the following: 232 residential dwelling units, and those are a combination of single-family homes, independent living apartments and villa apartments, 94 health care units, which are the assisted living units, the memory support units, the nursing units, and 61,000 square feet of common area and health care facilities. The principal facility, however, you see a very large building there, that's what we're calling our principal facility, will consist, the first floor footprint be approximately 160,000 square feet. The total square footage, because this is a three-story building, is 365,000 square feet. At this time, I'd like to bring to the podium Mr. Dave West of POMH to provide some additional information regarding this proposed facility. Mr. West, could you please state your name and position for the record?
My name's David West. I'm Vice President of New Business Development for Peninsula United Methodist Homes, POMH.
And how long have you been with POMH?
About 7 years.
Why does POMH develop CCRCs?
Well, POMH is a mission-driven organization, and our mission is to serve the needs of older adults and provide them with a high quality of life as they age and as their health needs change. So we have found, and we've been serving the needs of older adults in Delaware since 1960, and we found that a continuing care retirement community is an excellent setting that allows individuals to come in and have a high quality of life, and then as their needs change, we're able to meet those needs on the same campus.
Well, I note it's Peninsula United Methodist Homes, but is this a facility that's open to people of all religions?
Yes, it is. We are affiliated with the Peninsula Delaware United Methodist Conference, but we're open to individuals of all faiths and all backgrounds.
How does a CCRC operate?
Well, it's important to recognize that a continuing care retirement community, the individuals that move into a continuing care retirement community do not buy their units. They pay an entry fee that really entitles them to a lifelong lease within the community that gives them access to all of the amenities and services within the CCRC, as well as access to the health care that is provided in the campus. And so an individual pays an entry fee for a unit that can range from anywhere from a one-bedroom apartment to a two-and-a-half or two-bedroom den cottage, and then they also pay a monthly service fee that provides them with everything from a meal plan, housekeeping, transportation, utilities, and again, all of these services within the community, and it's a broad range of services.
Do they move around within the community?
Yes. What typically happens is individuals will move into the community while they're still very independent and active, and then as their needs change, they're able to move from one area of the community to another. And we'll talk about this more in a minute, but if individuals are living within a single-family home in a cottage and their needs change, they're able to then move into the main building, into the healthcare component, which is located in the northern area of the main building.
What happens if someone decides to move out? Do they get a percentage of their fee back?
Yes, what happens is, depending upon the type of entry fee selected, but what happens is individuals who move out receive typically 90% of their entry fee back to them when they choose to leave the community. For individuals who stay within the community throughout their lives and pass away within the community, then that 90% is returned to their estate. So, yes, they do.
What's the range of entry fees that you expect for this community?
The entry fees in this community will range anywhere from $235,000 in the apartments. Apartment entry fees will range from $235,000 to about $500,000. And then the entry fees in the cottages will range from $550,000 to $860,000.
And how did POMH decide on this general location for this particular facility?
PUMH has been operating in Sussex County since 1966, and we've been serving the needs primarily of Western Sussex County, but we've been very interested in the county as a whole, and we've been watching with great interest the changing demographic, so to speak, of the eastern side of the county. And you know, as we see every year at the Sussex County Today and Tomorrow Conference in Georgetown, you know, the aging of the county, the residents of the county, is becoming a concern, a greater concern. And we have been looking for several years for an opportunity to serve the needs of residents on the eastern side of the county. And in particular, when we look at the South Coastal region where this site is located, I mean, we would characterize that as an underserved area where there is a growing older adult population, and yet there's a growing gap between the housing and services that are available and what is needed. So early 2005, we became aware that St. Martha's Episcopal Church in Bethany Beach had this property that is owned by the diocese but is for the benefit of St. Martha's. And they were looking to further their mission in the community and had decided to pursue, to find a continuing care retirement community developer like PUMH who would come in and develop such a project on this property. So from early 2005, we spent several months kind of getting to know each other as well as looking at the property to see if it could physically support the type of development that we were proposing. And what we found, not only did we find that the property could physically support the development, but we found that many of our we had many shared ideals with the church in terms of what we wanted to accomplish. So at the end of 2006, we entered into a purchase agreement with the Episcopal Diocese and St. Martha's for the 43-acre portion of the 55-acre property.
At this time, I'd like you to walk us through the facility itself, tell us what we're looking at. I'd also just like to remind you and let the commission members know we have some flyovers from different views. So as Dave, as you go through kind of a discussion as to the buildings that we're looking at, and what we'll try, we're going to do our best to try and coordinate it with a flyover coming from a particular direction.
Okay. Well, just to orient you towards the site, you know, the neck of the property, it comes down here, and Muddy Neck Road is to the south. You have Ogre Drive to the west that leads to the community of Ocean Way Estates to the north. You have the Assawillman Canal to the east and a proposed development, Canal Landing, at West Bethany to the south. Now, what we have here, we have two points of access to the property. We have a connecting access point to Ogre Drive that would serve as a primary point of access, as well as a connection to the boulevard that would be constructed as part of the Canal Landing at West Bethany project. Now, what we've also done is we've made arrangements with the property owner in Ocean Way Estates that if we required a third point of access, there is a cul-de-sac that is contiguous to the northern property border at this in the northeast corner of the property, that if we needed an emergency connector with like a breakaway gate or something, we do have the ability to put that in there if it's so required. So anyway, you have two points of access, and as you notice that one of the primary elements in the community is a large water feature that runs right through the center of the property, and then bordering that you have single-family homes where cottages that run along the southern end of the water feature as well as the southern boundary of the property and the property, the western edge against this 12-acre remaining parcel. And then to the north, on the northern side of the water feature, these are 10-unit villa buildings. They are apartment buildings, three-story with first-story parking, parking on the first story, and then elevator access to the two floors above. So you have three of those units on the northern end of the water feature. And then as you see the access roads that work their way through the campus, really the heart of the campus is the main building. And this consists of the apartments and the commons areas and the healthcare areas. And if we can just get that one perspective,
perspective two.
Right, this is it. This would be looking north from the connection point to the Canal Landing at West Bethany project. And what you see here is the main building, and this is the end of the apartment building leading up to the front drive. And just to kind of give you a sense of what the building would look like. And then
they're not in here. Different.
In terms of the site plan, what we're doing here is we're kind of walking around, I guess, counterclockwise on the site. The first perspective was from this area. As you go to the east and you come along the canal, this one of the main features on the rear side of the main building is an area we call the Grand Lawn. And that is going to be an area where there's going to be that's an activity area as well as a green space for the residents of the community. This particular perspective here is from the canal facing the rear of the building. And this is a living room and dining area. And we'll talk about that more in a few minutes. But so anyway, this is the Grand Lawn. And then as we continue to move around the property, we've now moved over to, I guess, the west, and we're looking in this direction. And what you see here is, again, you see the focal point is the main entrance here. And then as you come along the western edge of the main building, you'll notice, and I know Vern Feather will talk about this more when he comes up, but this area here is a one-story building that consists of the skilled nursing component as well as the dementia care, memory support unit that you find all in this area. And then again, this is a continuation. This is the commons area on the first floor and the fitness and wellness center. And then again, the main building with the apartments. And then again, there's a bridge that crosses over, again, an amenity of the site plan. Anyway, that's just kind of a general perspective. Couple other features on the site plan. Walking paths, very important for our residents. So what we have done here is we've incorporated a series of sidewalks and walking paths that encircle the water feature, go, you know, everywhere throughout the community. We have sidewalks and walking paths that surround the grand lawn. And then you'll notice that there are some paths that kind of stub out to the canal property. And we've had conversations with Department of Natural Resources, Environmental Control, Parks and Recreation. There are future plans for a greenway along the canal. And what we would like to do, and you know, we don't really drive that process, but what we would like to be able to do is when the state is ready to address that in this area, we would like to be able to tie our paths into a walking path, into the greenway, and possibly incorporate one or two canal overlooks in this area that borders the canal. So those are the walking path features. In addition to that, you'll notice there, in terms of outbuildings, we have a pavilion here and a gazebo located here for residents to use, as well as a kind of a stopping place along the way. We have a maintenance building right here that houses both the kind of the maintenance shop for the community as well as a laundry facility. Located right here, we have two underground LP tanks that will serve the main building, kitchen and dining area, as well as the cottages and the laundry facility. I'm trying to think if I've covered everything. You'll see that the access, access to the 12-acre parcel, you'll see you have an access point right here. There's kind of a stub road in this location. You also have an access point at the end of this parking area. And the walking paths that we have are made to connect to the 12-acre parcel, as well as the canal landing project to the south. So again, we're trying to promote as much interconnectivity as we can in the parcels.
What type of convenience services are you anticipating?
Well, within a continuing care retirement community, you have a wide range of services. You have, we had mentioned, dining services. You have a bank. You have a mail room where you can receive and send mail. You have a gift shop. You have a beauty salon, a library, transportation services where we will have everything from weekly routine shopping excursions for the residents, as well as, you know, trips to the Bethany Boardwalk on a routine basis, and other longer excursions, sometimes overnight excursions, and we'll also have transportation to medical appointments, local medical appointments.
How about the aquatic center, fitness center? Are you planning those?
Yes, absolutely. And we're going to move into that in a moment. Let's go to the main building, if that's okay. Now, really, we talked about before, the main building is really the heart of the CCRC. And what you'll see in the main building, again, this is the main entrance is located right here. It's a covered parkway, a covered opening. We call it a porte-cochere. And then as you come in, we'll talk about this area that's in yellow and blue in a moment. This is the commons area. And this is the fitness and wellness center. So we'll come back to those in a moment. But what you'll see on the first floor, on the southern end of the building, these are all apartments, one and two bedroom apartments. And then on the second and third floor above the commons, and the fitness and wellness, you will also have one- and two-bedroom apartments. And then as you move towards the northern part of the community, this orange area is what we call the back of the house functions. It's everything from the mechanical area to shipping and receiving, to the soiled and clean laundry rooms, additional storage rooms, locker rooms for the staff. All of that takes place in this orange area. And then as you, this northern end of the project is where you find the healthcare accommodations. To the right, this is the assisted living wing, where we have 40 units for assisted living. On the first floor, you have a dining area and activity space and common space. The dining area faces out onto the grand lawn. And then the second and third floor above on this wing have the assisted living units. And then as you move towards the west, you encounter two areas as you move towards healthcare. The first is our rehab. We have occupational, physical, and speech therapy, as well as aquatic therapy that will work in conjunction with the pool component of the fitness center. Then the therapy area is located right here, and then adjacent to the therapy area is a clinic. And within that clinic, you'll have the medical director for the community, you'll have a nurse practitioner, and then you'll have offices and examining rooms where the medical appointments for residents will, you know, take place within the clinic area. So you have rehab and clinic. And then to the north, this red area is the memory support unit. That's a 15-unit memory support area. It's a secure environment, very high level of activity designed for people with early stage Alzheimer's and other forms of dementia. That is located here, again, in the red. And then that same design, which we call like a neighborhood design, you'll see extended over here. These three purple areas are three 13-unit neighborhoods that represent the skilled nursing, or what you would typically see as a nursing home environment. This concept is one that we've worked on a lot. It's a very residential feel. One of the changes in our industry in recent years has been to move away from the more institutional feel that you often see in nursing homes. Each of these three units is a separate neighborhood. Each has their own dining area, living room, residential kitchen, dedicated staff that work only within that unit. It's a very positive, high quality of life for individuals who have reached that stage in terms of their healthcare issues. So those three areas are located here. And then in the middle, kind of this light purple area, this is the commons area for the health center. Everything from administrative offices to a living room, library, spa. There's an area in here for a chapel for Sunday services. And then the entrance to this area is located right here. So you have an entrance to the skilled nursing area at this part of the building, and you have an entrance to the assisted living section right here, both of those to the north. So that basically covers the components of the main building. Now I want to talk a little bit more, Keith, if you can. The commons, really the heart of the community. What you find here, and I'll just kind of briefly walk through this, but as you come into the front entrance, you're going to have a lobby and a living room, and this is going to be a two-story space that opens out onto the grand lawn. Now, to the right, once you come in, you're going to have a reception area, you're going to have a security desk, and then you're going to have administrative offices and sales and marketing offices. Now, as you move into the living room, to the right, you have a library for the use of the residents. And as you move to the left, you have the start of the dining venues within the community. Now, these are very much restaurant-style dining venues, but you have two of them. The first one we call the Marketplace, which is located here, which serves meals throughout the day, both people who want to eat, dine in, or take out. So you're going to have a wide variety of more casual types of meals will be located here. And then this is where you would also have like a convenience store with, you know, milk and bread and some of the basics for our residents so they don't have to go out on the roads to get those types of things. Those will be located in the marketplace. Then as you move along here, you have a small lounge area, and then you move into a more formal dining setting with table where you have an option of either buffet or to be served at your tables, and all of these facing the grand lawn. Out here, there is a covered walkway and an open pavilion that border the dining areas. And then this is the kitchen. And this kitchen serves not only the needs of the commons dining facilities, but also as a staging area for the dining components within the healthcare part of the building. Now, as you move along here, you have a gift shop, you have a bank, and then now you're starting to work your way down this wing towards the fitness and wellness center.
Excuse me, sir. You've got 300 and some thousand square feet here. Are you going to go through every square foot of this place for us tonight, or you just want to hit the high spots for us?
I'm sorry. Just hitting the high spots.
Great. Good.
Okay.
Continue.
All right. Multi-purpose room, game room, billiard room, salon, massage therapy, land fitness equipment here, pool, locker rooms, and a phase two auditorium. That completes the review of the community center.
Outstanding. Thank you.
What services will we be requiring from the nearby towns?
Very few. We provide our own security. We maintain our own streets. We maintain our street lights. Really, the service that we'll need will be fire and ambulance. And we've met with Doug Scott, the fire chief at Millville Fire Company, which is responsible. We're in the Millville Fire Company district. He understands the nature of the community. We explained the program in detail, and he seems to understand what the needs will be that he'll need to support.
One of the things that I think we've talked about in the past is that CCRCs benefit the area through job creation, economic activity, through volunteerism and financial support of the residents and whatnot. But let's talk a little bit about the job creation aspect of this. How many jobs are we talking about, and what kind of jobs?
Okay, well, we're going to have anywhere from 130 to 140 full-time positions, which by the time we have individuals with job sharing, will be well over 200 jobs that we will be filling within this community, ranging from medical professional types of positions, nurses, nurse practitioners, certified nursing assistants, culinary arts, dietary positions, various administrative positions, and then housekeeping, maintenance, security, those types of positions.
Where do we expect the job seekers to come from?
Well, a combination of places. We have individuals within our network of communities. We have over 1,000 employees within PUMH. We have individuals within that network who will work here, but many of the people that work here will be working cooperatively with area high schools and Deltec Georgetown and some of the other higher education institutions for cooperative arrangements, and so there will be a variety of sources for us.
Okay, let's take a couple minutes and talk about the density of the project. Determining the density of a CCRC is not a straightforward process. One of the reasons is, how do you determine the density of a nursing home? How do you determine the density of the hospital bed area? We have actually a chart that we'd like to go through. Dave, if you could help kind of walk us through the chart. Who developed this, first of all?
We did.
And maybe let's go line by line. Let's talk a little bit about the first portion of the chart, which is the project build out for this specific project. The chart underneath of that talks about this particular project's density, if you call it, and it compares it to the other CCRCs that we've shown you earlier for Manor House and whatnot. Dave?
Okay. The upper part of this exhibit, just basically a breakdown of the number of units and the type of units within this community. And so you have 232 independent living units and 94 healthcare units for a total of 326 units. So then what we did was we took a look at our four existing communities, Cokesbury Village, Country House, Heron Point, Manor House, did the same breakout between independent living, assisted living, and skilled in total, and then the number of developable acres to look at the number of units per developable acre. And as you see here, Cokesbury Village is 8.1, Country House is 8.8, Heron Point is 7.9, and Manor House is 8.2. And so if you look at the Mariposa Bethany project and compare it to the others, it is at 7.6. If you take all of the different unit types divided by the number of developable acres, if you were to remove the healthcare component and look strictly at the independent living units, that's about 5.4. We did that same exercise with our other communities, and with the other communities, independent living density only ranged from 5.6 to 6.9.
So depending on how you calculate the density for this particular project, if you want to include the healthcare units in with your density calculation or not, if you include the healthcare units, you're looking at 7.6 dwelling units per acre. If you take the healthcare units out, you're looking at 5.4 dwelling units per acre. Is that correct?
Yes.
Have you had an opportunity to meet with the public to explain this project?
Yes, we did. We had a public meeting last Monday evening at the Social Hall of Mariners Bethel United Methodist Church in Ocean View, invited the public through the local newspapers. We had about 70 people come out, and it was a pretty miserable night, so we were glad to see the turnout, and we thought that the meeting went very well.
What kind of a response did you get?
Very positive. I mean, it seems like there's a recognition from the residents in the area that as we feel, that a community like this is needed in this part of the county.
All right. Thank you very much, Mr. West.
Well.
At this time, I'd like to bring up the project manager for the architect, SFCS, Mr. Vernon Feather, talk a little bit more about the specifics, some unusual things about this particular development.
I want you to just hit the high spots. This is a land use hearing. This has nothing to do with buildings, architecture, and all that. We're glad to know this stuff, but just give us a short version, okay?
All right.
Thank you.
He has three things he's going to be talking to you about, so this will be short. Number one is the height of the building. Number two is the minimum distance between the houses. And number three is LEED certification.
Okay.
So number one, can you state your name and position for the record?
Yeah, my name is Vernon Feather. I am a principal and vice president of the SFCS.
All right, there are a couple of unusual items about which we're going to be asking for county approval, and those are the items that I'd like for you to talk about tonight. First, what's the anticipated height of the building in the community?
All right, there's the tallest part of the site, and we've got this rendering here to demonstrate this. The very peak of it in the center of the campus is this chimney at the main building that is approximately 67 feet high. The roof line of that portion of the building is approximately 58 feet. And then surrounding that, put up the next drawing. Yeah. Adjacent to that, that's that point I just showed you was this portion in the center. Adjacent to that, most of this building is approximately 48 feet in height.
Are you aware of the limitations in Sussex County on height restriction?
Yes.
Okay, and your plan is to get a variance or something?
Yes.
Okay, good luck with that. Go ahead.
as you move to the perimeters of the site, we've dropped down the project. For example, the healthcare component is a single-story building that sits to the north of the site, adjacent to the existing residential development north of that. Likewise, as you go on the south end of the site, is where we put the single-family homes adjacent to the planned development that's south of that project. So we essentially tapered the building down from the center of the campus.
Why are the buildings so tall?
Part of what's driving that is the community aspect on the first floor requires fairly large rooms, such as the dining room, the pool, the multi-purpose room. Those rooms need taller ceilings than typical. And then because of those there are healthcare components and that those are gathering spaces, they need a larger air handling exchanges, which takes more space in the interstitial space, floor-to-floor heights. Another reason that it's taller is in the roof area. We've chosen to use energy recovery systems that they're mechanical systems that need to be at the top of the building, either exposed on the roof or in the roof area. We've chose to go in the roof area, which means we need a little bit taller volume in the roof form to locate that equipment. And some of the reasons for doing that is it helps protect the equipment by being in the roof area, protects it from the high winds, particularly in a hurricane zone. We've learned from other projects in hurricane areas that it's best not to put these large pieces of equipment exposed on the roof, exposed to the salt air, exposed to the high winds. They can be damaged, and in worst-case scenarios, they could actually come off the roof. It's happened, and become projectiles in a hurricane. So we found it's a lot better to keep that equipment under the roof area. Another reason that the center of the building is taller than the surrounding area was to create a sense of, it's an architectural maneuver to give the sense when it's a large campus, when people come onto the campus, we want it to be intuitively aware of where the main entrance is. So having this taller building at the center of the campus that you can see as you drive onto the campus helps let people, it's a wayfinding maneuver, lets people know where the main entrance is to the building.
Secondly, we're asking for a 10-foot minimum distance between the single-family homes within the CCRC. Can you tell us why you feel this is necessary?
Sure. Some of the reasons for wider distances usually comes from traditional neighborhood developments where you have individual property lines, and that's usually driven because of the minimum setbacks from the side yard doubled on each side of the property line. In this case, there are no property separations between the single-family homes. The entire campus is owned by the development, so you don't have that kind of property separation distance. The property between, in fact, all of the campus, and particularly the space between the homes, is maintained by the community, so it's not individual residents trying to maintain those spaces, and nor will they be out there planning things in between. Another reason that there's often more development is that in most of neighborhood traditional developments, there's no one authority that can control the design from one house to the next. My neighbor can build anything I want within setback requirements and code. They can put up a big window looking right onto my patio. So one of the things that control that is more space to allows me to put screening up. In our development, we're designing the houses so that we're going to maintain control of separation of public entry zones, bedroom, and private zones in the yards, so that we're doing that within the design, allowing us to go down to as low as 10 feet. Now, we're not going to have 10 feet on every section, but we need to be able to go that way in certain zones so that we can widen where it's important to widen it.
And lastly, something that's unusual about the project is the desire to pursue LEED certification. Can you tell us what this is and how it affects the project?
Sure. LEED stands for Leadership in Energy and Environmental Design. You know that one. And it's a voluntary standard for designing high-energy, sustainable buildings. Some of the things that it focuses on is site sustainability, water efficiency, high energy performance, and the use of renewable energy sources. It also promotes the use of recycled materials, renewable building materials, as well as improving indoor air quality and avoiding materials that, off gas, and also the use of smart use of natural light to avoid using artificial lighting, and it improves improved air quality throughout the building. So we think that approaching the LEED is very important, not only from just a wise use of resources and land, but it produces a healthier building.
All right, thank you very much, Mr. Feather.
Thank you.
As you've heard before, the PLUS hearing on the project was on November the 28th, 2007. PLUS comments were issued on December the 21st, 2007. Those are in tab 14 in your book. Our response to the PLUS comments are dated January 22nd, 2008. That's tab 15. The state planning's response to our response is tab 16 in the exhibit book. This project has evolved throughout the PLUS process. We originally started out with 6 of the 3-story villa apartment buildings and 15 duplexes. Now we're down to 3 of the 3-story villa buildings and 38 single-family homes. There was also some reconfiguration of the healthcare commons, the memory support areas. As Mr. Lank has mentioned earlier, this is to be supplied by public water, to be supplied by Tidewater Utilities. You'll see in tab 19 the petition for inclusion in the Tidewater service territory. Wastewater to be supplied by Sussex County will be required to annex into the Bethany Beach Sewer District. At this point, I'd like to bring Mr. Keith Rudy to the podium a little bit, talk about some of the technical engineering elements of the project. Can you please state your name and position for the record?
Sure. My name is Keith Rudy. I'm a civil engineer with McCrone.
One of the items that was talked about earlier is the provision of sewer service for this project. Has there been any conversation with Sussex County about this ability to provide the service?
Yes, we've had a few discussions with Sussex County Engineering regarding capacity and where the selected tie-in would be. As contained in the plus comments and as what was read into the record earlier today, we are required to tie in Ochre Drive to the existing facility right there.
Okay, we'll talk a little bit about the impervious cover. Currently, because it's agriculture and there's nothing on the site, that's 0%. We propose in the plus application it would be 34%. However, plus has asked that we go back and take a closer look, do some additional calculations. What is that impervious cover percentage at this point?
Yeah, we're approximately 45% impervious, and the increase in impervious has come from the addition of numerous sidewalks and trails, in addition to plaza areas proposed for the individual gardens in the healthcare area, and also the 405 proposed parking spaces.
Will the developer be utilizing BMPs?
Yes, absolutely. As part of our LEED certification, we're going to be required to explore every opportunity and alternative with regard to structural and non-structural practices to account for stormwater management quantity and quality.
Is the project in a source water protection area?
No.
Does it have the potential to impact a source water protection area?
No.
Is it in a special flood hazard area?
It is located in a Zone X defined as the 500-year floodplain. The published FEMA map has elevation 5 located AE at this reach of the Assawoman Canal.
Will the project contribute more runoff to flood hazard areas than prior to the development?
I'm sorry, I missed that question.
Will the project contribute more runoff to flood hazard areas than prior to development?
No, we're going to be required to manage that.
Was a wetlands delineation performed?
Yes.
And who did the delineation?
It was by JCM Environmental.
Do you know when that was done?
I believe it was done in October 2005, and there is an update currently in progress.
What did they find in the wetlands delineation?
They found waters of the U.S. or possible waters of the U.S. and also approximately a half acre of tidal wetlands. There's also a small wetland located on this portion right on the property line in a form of a ditch. However, since the adoption of the Philadelphia ditch rule, that is currently under reevaluation by the Corps.
So when you said there's an additional investigation currently going on at the property, what did you mean?
Absolutely. What we did was we did a historical review. We installed several piezometers over a three-month period, and we monitored the fluctuations of groundwater in conjunction with the tidal elevations in the Assawoman Canal. We also then took select storm events that occurred during this period and modeled that and evaluated what the impacts were relative to one another. That information has been submitted to the Corps.
So how much wetlands do we have?
Basically, we're pending the determination of the Corps, but it is possible that there will be no wetlands, no non-tidal wetlands on site, just the tidal portion, the half-acre tidal portion right at the mouth of the canal.
Has a JD been applied for?
Yes.
And do you know when that was?
The original JD was applied for, I believe, in January of 2006.
All right, and you'll see that application in the tab 24 in your exhibit book. Are we currently anticipating any ground disturbance within 100 feet of wetlands?
Yes. Again, within close proximity to that existing tidal wetland.
So that's the only, if you would, just point out the wetlands on the property.
Sure. The tidal wetland would be located here, which is the conjunction or the confluence of the ditch on site and with the canal, and that is the portion that is tidal.
And Sussex County Code requires a 50-foot buffer from tidal wetlands. Does this plan reflect that requirement?
Yes.
Do we anticipate a need for a wetland permit for the discharge of stormwater?
Yes, actually, this is our principal discharge and outfall now. We will likely need a outfall permit. It most likely would be a nationwide permit 7 from the Corps.
Can you point out the perennial stream adjacent to the site?
That would be the Assawoman Canal.
And will there be ground disturbance within 100 feet of the water body?
There could likely be disturbance within 100 feet. However, there's approximately 50 feet from the edge of the canal to the state boundary. So we will be getting close to that, but it will be probably within 100 feet.
Are there any tax ditches on the property?
Actually, there is a small portion of a tax ditch located at the mouth, or what we call the neck, at Muddy Neck Road. Bear with me one second. It is a small remnant of a tax ditch right there, but that will not affect this proposed plan at all.
Can you describe the proposed mechanisms for stormwater management?
Yes, we have several structural and non-structural practices proposed. Predominantly, we are looking to do disconnected runoff from the roof drains from the structure and or other remaining structures. Those will go into possibly bioswales and filter strips distributed throughout the community. In conjunction, we're looking at planting native species. Again, that is going to be a component of our LEED certification, and relying on those in certain areas, like, say, for example, in this area of the parking here, rely on that as depressional storage and treat that through biofiltration. In addition, you notice that we have a very big pond. I may be able to hit a golf ball that way, but certainly not the length of that pond.
And one of the things that the commission should be aware of is that pond doesn't currently exist. Keith, have you done any analysis or performed any calculations to determine that you're going to be able to keep the pond wet?
Absolutely. That was also a secondary portion of our evaluation to look at the relationship of the rainfall runoff and groundwater. We can keep that pond wet.
How much open space is provided within the project?
I believe it's just over 26 acres, or approximately 63% of the property.
Okay, and what's the intended use of the open space?
I think Dave touched on a bunch of it. We want to incorporate the active component through the numerous network of walking trails and sidewalks throughout the community. We've got this grand lawn area, which could be used for community-type events. We have a community green over in this area here, which could be for a number of different activities. I think we were even thinking of a bocce court at one point.
I'd just like to remind the commission, Dave pointed this out already, that the applicant met with DENREC. They specifically met with the Land Preservation Office, and they were going to try to integrate the open space plan with the Assawoman Canal. Currently, DENREC is working on their master plan for the Assawoman Canal, and so at this point, we're waiting with them. The minutes of the meeting between the applicant and DENREC are included in your exhibit book at tab 28. With regard to buffer maintenance, as I mentioned earlier, the applicant will be charged with maintaining all the buffers, the streets, the open space. Keith, is there a plan to guide the applicant with respect to the buffers?
Yes, we've included a brief buffer management or open space management plan to provide guidance and recommendations to the maintenance of the open space.
Okay. I'd like to talk a little bit about the buffers. There is currently an agreement in principle. And this agreement in principle is between PUMH, Mariposa, and the trustees. And this is regarding that 12-acre piece of land up in the corner of the property. Sussex County Code 99-96G2 requires the following. It says, for any new subdivision development located in whole or in part within 50 feet of the boundary of land used primarily for agricultural purposes, no improvement requiring an occupancy approval for a residential type use shall be constructed within 50 feet of the boundary of land used primarily for agricultural purposes. Right now, the land is farmed. The parties to this agreement, however, do not want the CCRC to be constricted by the 50-foot buffer requirement, and so they've entered into this agreement in principle. And Keith, can you show us what we're talking about here?
Sure. That would be along this proposed property line.
Because the parties don't want this to be an issue, they've entered into this agreement, and the operative provision in the agreement is that upon application for a building permit anywhere on the 43 acres, a deed restriction will become activated on the 12-acre parcel that prohibits the agricultural use of the property, and it compensates the trustees for this loss in future income. But I don't want you to think that we don't have a buffer around the property. Keith, can you tell us what kind of buffer, the size that we have on the property?
Sure. It's a proposed minimum 30-foot wide buffer along the northern edge, along the property line bordering the 12 acres, along the property line bordering Ocean Way Estates Phase 4, and again along the southern property line. So basically that area.
Is this a forested buffer?
Yes. I believe there's approximately 1 acre and change of existing trees on site. The site is predominantly farmed and clear. This buffer would certainly augment that and provide for nearly 1,000 trees in that buffer.
So the applicant would be charged with putting in place 1,000 new trees on this site?
At least 1,000 trees, yes.
Okay. We've mentioned there'll be some environmental mitigation measures anticipated with the project. What are those measures that we're talking about?
Well, we're talking about, I mentioned previously, the native species landscaping, again, incorporating structural and non-structural methods, predominantly bioswales, biofiltration, wherever we could to disconnect the runoff.
Was a Phase 1 environmental site assessment performed?
Yes, by JCM Environmental.
Did the Phase 1 raise any environmental issues of concern?
No.
The Phase 1 is available, and the applicant would be happy to submit this report if the commission would like. Regarding the forest, the number of acres on the site today that is wooded, as listed on the PLUS application, is 1.1 acre, and the number of acres to be removed is listed as 0.24 acres. This means that 78% of the wooded area is to be preserved, what little wooded area there is. Is that correct?
Yes.
Let's talk a little bit about traffic. Did DelDOT require a TIS?
No, they did not. A TIS was required for the proposed subdivision to the south in the town of Ocean View. We met several times with DelDOT to review the project and its evolution, and in the final analysis, we received documentation from DelDOT that a traffic impact study was not required.
Did they mention that we should expect to share in any of the off-site improvements?
Yes, and in particular, the most significant project that they mentioned is proposed to occur out at the intersection of Ogre Drive and Muddy Neck Road. I'll point that out. It's right there. Currently, there is a bypass lane, so you have two lanes of traffic. If the traffic counts get up beyond a certain threshold, DelDOT can permit a bypass lane to be installed. There currently is a bypass installed. However, the road reclassification to a major collector requires not only additional right-of-way for Muddy Neck Road to become an 80-foot right-of-way, they're going to require us to make this a fully protected left turn, so there will be a center turn lane.
Are those the only improvements that we know of at this time?
That is correct.
Okay. How many peak hour trips do we anticipate?
I believe the calculations submitted to DelDOT were 118 peak hour trips that would occur in the morning, and approximately 5% of those would be truck deliveries.
Will the streets within the project be private?
Yes.
Okay. And has there been any additional right-of-way provided along Muddy Neck Road and Ogre Drive?
Sure. And of course, our frontage is just over 150 feet, but certainly we can provide the necessary right-of-way along our frontage, including the permanent easements that DelDOT's requiring on our frontage.
Okay. One thing I'd just like to bring up, since I haven't really touched on it before, it's sort of lingering out there, is there's another agreement in principle. This time between the applicant and the developer to the south. This is Canal Landing, and with the Burzins to the west. And the reason that this was entered into is because when we first started thinking about this project, as you recall, it was going to go through Ocean View. The Canal Landing to the south of us really wanted to be in Ocean View. They, however, were separated. They weren't contiguous to Ocean View without going across our property, and particularly the flagpole. So we have an agreement with Canal Landing that so long as we agreed that they could annex, we would agree that our flagpole could be annexed into the town of Ocean View, and that therefore they would be contiguous. They could get into the town of Ocean View, which is what they wanted. In return, they were going to give us access directly through their property down to Muddy Neck Road. That's how this project, one of the things that Dave had talked about earlier, one of the accesses is going to be down through Muddy Neck Road, and that's how that comes about. So at this point, Canal Landing has been annexed in, and we're just waiting to have our boulevard through the property. Endangered species, are there any known threatened or endangered species?
No, none identified.
All right. Regarding cultural and historic resources, according to the comments from the Division of Historical and Cultural Affairs, which are in tab 14 in your book, there's no known cultural and historic resources at the property, but they had recommended that prior to disturbing the property, the developer hire an archaeological consultant to examine the property for archaeological resources. We sent a letter to Terrence Burns from the State Historic Preservation Office offering him the opportunity to come and take a look at the site. We also did, in fact, hire a consultant to come and take a look at the archaeological resources of the property. This was Height Consulting. They performed a Phase 1A cultural resource assessment. It's in its draft form right now. We don't have a final report for you. But Keith, can you tell us what the Height consultants found?
Basically, they did not find any significant items or elements of historical significance on site.
Okay. Has there been any communication with the fire marshal?
Yes.
And what are the results of that communication?
We met with the fire marshal on several occasions, and we reviewed with him certain elements of the site layout and design. We reviewed with him basically principal access, secondary access, extension, location of fire lanes, location of fire hydrants, sizes of water mains. So we've had several significant discussions with the fire marshal regarding safety issues with this project.
And the minutes of the meeting with the fire marshal are also in your exhibit book. They're at tab 26. Talk about parking. How did you determine the number of parking spaces necessary?
We did do a code compliant review, and based on the code, the calculation came out to be roughly 368 parking spaces. Based on operational requirements by PUMH and in terms of the staff and providing sufficient parking for visitors and such, the proposed parking is higher than that. It's at 405 spaces.
Okay, there are a number of other letters of support. I know Mr. Lank read one of them into the record with regard to the Bethany Fenwick Area Chamber of Commerce. There are two other ones that you may not have received at this point in time. We have copies of those as well. One is from the Greater Seaford Chamber of Commerce. One is from Mr. Dave Smith. This is one of two Dave Smiths who have submitted letters of support for this development. So when you see Dave Smith twice, it's not the same person. It's two different guys. He's a non-resident of the Manor House in Seaford, but a pool member and a satisfied one. In closing, I'd just like to talk to say that this project fills a number of needs for the residents in Eastern Sussex County. It's a quality housing and a continuum of care for the elderly, a strong wellness and health care component, and, of course, job creation. Being developed by an entity with a proven track record in Sussex County and in Maryland for the successful development of these types of communities. It's being developed in an environmentally sensitive manner, consistent with the environmentally sensitive developing area requirements, with LEED certification, public water and sewer, 63% open space, interconnectivity, best management practices, and buffering. Although it's zone AR1, it's clearly an infill project, being surrounded on all sides by development of varying densities, some quite high, in two municipalities. It's in compliance with the AR1 Agricultural Residential District with a conditional use. I won't go through the 99.9C subdivision considerations. Those are in the executive summary of your exhibit book. But the hallmark of this particular developer as I think that you've been able to see through this presentation, is just that it's extensive communication and cooperation with everyone that has an interest in this property. We've talked about extensive conversation and communication with the town of Oceanview, with surrounding landowners, being the Burzens and the Canal Landing to the south, with governmental agencies such as DENREC and the fire marshal, and the public at large through the public meeting that we held over in Oceanview. As opposed to simply building residences, caring for the elderly and providing for their changing health and wellness needs within a safe and vibrant community is the mission of the applicant, and we hope that you'll recommend approval of this conditional use to County Council.
All right, we thank you. We'll see if anyone has any questions for you, and we'll start with Mr. Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Ms. Hansen. Go off my notes that I made. You mentioned the remaining 12 acres adjacent to the subject of the application. Is that a part of the same parcel, or is that a separate parcel?
It's part of the same parcel. Are we going through a subdivision process, or is this the subdivision? We know. This is the same. It's all part of the same parcel at this point. By the approval of this particular application, we'll be subdividing then this parcel into two separates.
And these units, the 232 dwelling units and the others that make up the rest of the complex, they are not sold. Is that
correct?
Correct. There's no fee simple. There's no.
That's correct.
State and county transfer taxes. It's a lease. Do you get a rental license or something to
Dave, do you want to
handle these?
Well,
you have to give your name again too. Sorry,
David West, PUMH. We issue a residency and care agreement to each of the residents, and it's under the. It's actually under the jurisdiction of the Department of Insurance, State Department of Insurance, in terms of the contract form and disclosure requirements. So that is the contract or agreement that we enter into with the individual residents.
So you don't act as like a rental agent. You're signing some other type of rental occupancy agreement.
I don't have the legal definition. It's a residency and care agreement, and I don't have the Department of Insurance code referencing it, but it's in compliance with the continuing care retirement community regulations within the Department of Insurance. But it's not it's not a contract. It's not an equity sale. It's a residency and care agreement.
Is it similar to what you use at the other facilities?
Absolutely. Yes.
Located
yes.
in Delaware?
Okay. Yes.
And you mentioned the buildings, of course, would have elevators. Towards the end of the presentation, you were talking about the parking and the imperviousness, and you indicated that you've supplied 405 as opposed to 368. Have you thought about, as part of your LEED certification, can you use any type of impervious paver?
That is a possibility, and that will be something that we will evaluate. The fire marshal isn't too keen on the pervious type paver systems with what they want to run on, so we'll have to really be creative in trying to find ways to reduce the imperviousness.
You will have to, I think, with depending on building over 35 feet, but you have to have fire lanes, dedicated
that is correct.
Fire lanes.
There are currently, based on our meeting with the fire marshal, there are several key elements relating to fire lanes. So the health care is under a different requirement than an apartment building. So the requirement is to maintain 100% principal access surrounding that. So we're going to try to be creative in integrating the fire marshal's requirement to provide adequate access and yet make this feel and be an area of a garden-type setting where we can trade off their requirement for access with green and plantings and other things.
And I realize you, if you were approved, you'd have to, or you would be asked to comply with the county requirements for parking. Perhaps Mr. West would know, is, do you find that, your most of your residents have less than two cars per household?
Many of them do, although that's changed in recent years, but we have, you know, many of them have two cars, but what we find is it depends on if you have a couple or a single individual. And so depending upon how many couples you have within the community, that generally will determine whether or not you have two cars or one per unit. You know, in addition, between providing for the number of visitors that we have and the use of the fitness and wellness center, and as far as the employee requirements, that's what led us towards the calculation that we performed.
Thank you. And you will, you do anticipate to have a shuttle?
Yes.
Possibly?
Absolutely.
Be able to cut down on some traffic and
Absolutely.
Things that way. How about evacuation plans for residents? Mr. Feather was talking about air conditioners blowing off the roofs of buildings and things like that in assorted mayhem. Will you have plans to get your people to high ground?
Absolutely. We've been working with not only the other long-term care facilities within the state, but our other communities, as well as the state Healthcare Resources Board and Healthcare Facilities Association, which is in the process of redefining their evacuation plans in coastal areas. So we will definitely have, you know, there's kind of two levels. One is a sheltering in place concept versus a full-scale evacuation. Mm-hmm. So we've been working with Sussex County on the looking at the Sussex County Annex Plan and the town of Ocean View, which, although we're not in the town of Ocean View, we are right next door, and so we have, and because of our discussions with the town of Ocean View originally for annexation, we entered into discussions with them in terms of their evacuation plans to make sure we were dovetailing into that.
I'd like to add something also. This is Keith Rudy with McCrone. Basically, PUMH is looking to make a significant investment in this facility. The last thing they want to do is have it be destroyed or damaged during a storm event. And as I mentioned before, in the Assawoman Canal at this location, the published FEMA map for a 100-year flood is elevation 5. The plans that we submitted for your consideration show grading where the finished floor of that elevation or finished floor of that facility is at elevation 8. So there's a reason why that pond is so big. The material from that pond will be utilized to elevate the key institutions on this site to get them up out of harm's way. And elevation 8, again, according to the published FEMA map, is approximately the 500-year flood.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you. Quick question that I didn't see in your exhibits. I didn't see where you depicted, like, for the dumpsters. And are you using compactors? You mentioned a maintenance building.
You know, funny you mention that. Dave and I actually had a discussion about that earlier, whether to mention the trash compactor. Right in the back with the principal area of shipping and receiving, we have a facility for trash compactor, and that is the area right at the back of the house. That is where that activity would take place. It would be consolidated from across the site, collected, and then transmitted from there.
All the questions I have at this time. Thank you.
All right, sir. Mr. Cordy.
I have no questions.
Mr. Johnson.
I noticed on some of the drawings there was reference to some man-made ditches. What's going to happen with those?
Again, Keith Rudy with McCrone. That was the subject of the in-depth study that we did for the hydrology for the site. Those ditches would be filled. We're waiting for a determination by the Corps of the Engineers. Those ditches across the site, the center portion of the site, were not identified as wetlands. They were identified as waters of the U.S., and so they're kind of treated as a little bit differently than wetlands per se. But the proposal as part of this project is that they would be filled.
And if they're filled, what impact would that have on the adjoining properties in terms of water runoff from those properties?
That's an excellent question. That, again, was part and parcel to our follow-up evaluation. There are a couple of criterions to qualify for the Philadelphia ditch rule. One of those is periods of continuous flow. Well, with our monitoring, I believe it was 17% of the readings that we took over a three-month period exhibited zero flow in the ditch. So there are obviously, and this is classically the wettest part of the season. So from that standpoint, we have a very strong argument that there was no observed flow 17% of the time. Second criterion is interconnectivity with upland areas. So there is, let me grab the overall map. There is approximately 132-acre drainage area draining approximately that portion that if you looked at topography and you looked at information provided by DENREC, 132 acres would drain through this site. So, again, what we did was we prepared a hydrologic model and ran theoretical storm events through that, the 210 and 100-year storm. And what we found was we had a predicted water surface elevation in that ditch if the flow were passing through that ditch, if the entire drainage area were contributing. And our analysis point was just downstream of the confluence of both of those ditches. And what we found is through our monitoring and through the active real-time weather station collection that occurs, we actually get the rainfall over time. So we could actually calibrate our hydrologic model to specific storm events. And I believe what we did was we calibrated to the storm event on February 13th. And what happened was the flow that we would expect in that ditch, if all 132 acres were contributing runoff to that ditch, was actually twice what we actually observed. And if you looked at the immediate contributing runoff, it was basically the site itself. So there is, for all intent and purposes, no significant hydraulic connectivity. Now, that's not to say that we cannot ignore or block conveyance from the upland areas. So we have a solution for that. The grading plan that was submitted for your consideration will... I need my own van away here, will actually intercept in this portion of Ogre Drive and convey to our pond and pass and treat through our pond any possible upstream water that does make its way to our site. So although we suspect that that water doesn't come to our site, the plan as presented to you for your consideration has made accommodations to receive all of that water. Should it get there?